Headlines with reports of another spike in COVID infections and renewed warnings about the likely pressure on hospitals. The Delta variant now accounts for the majority of new infections. However, there's been another significant change since the last substantial rise in cases. Almost 60% of the adult population is now fully vaccinated. From today, people aged between 25 and 29 are able to register on the vaccine portal. Our reporter Amy Nurieda has been speaking to some young people about their thoughts on the vaccine and the Delta variant.
I'm 19, but 20 tomorrow.
Did you register for your Johnson & Johnson vaccine?
No, I haven't, not yet. I don't really have any desire, to be honest.
To get vaccinated at all?
Well, yeah, if I had to get any of them, it would be the Pfizer.
Were you aware that you're more likely to catch COVID as a result of the Delta variant?
Yeah, I suppose I was, but I wasn't really like that conscious about it, like, you know, because it's just going on with so long at this stage that I just wanted over and done with. So I kind of just put it to the back of my mind and hoped that it wasn't as bad as everyone was saying it was, you know.
So have you been minimising contacts? Have you been kind of wary and minding yourself? Or have you been kind of carrying on and...
Just kind of been carrying on, like, day to day, taking each day as it comes and getting on with life.
When it's your time to register for the vaccine, will you?
If it means getting on with life, then I will. If it means that, like, I'm allowed travelling again and things, then I will get it. But for now, like, it really doesn't appeal to me at all.
I'm 23.
Did you register for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine?
No, I haven't registered yet. I'm a bit wary about the side effects down the line. I think we don't know enough yet. I think I probably will register soon, just because I know there's more and more restrictions now for people who don't have it. So I think down the line we're definitely going to have to, but I think I'm going to do a bit more research into it to see which one I'd rather take, rather than just take one because it's there.
Are you aware of the increased risk of catching COVID because of Delta variant?
No, I actually wasn't.
What age category are you in?
30.
So have you registered for your vaccine?
Yeah, I just registered this week.
Did you try and get a vaccine in the pharmacist before you actually registered?
Yeah, I was actually able to go on a waiting list in two different pharmacies, but the HSC was the first one to, so I'm getting mine on Sunday with them.
Were you aware of how much more likely you are to catch COVID because of the Delta variant?
Not really, no.
Some people there in County Kerry speaking to our reporter Amy Nurieda. The chief executive of the HSE, Paul Reid, is with us in studio. Good morning.
Morning, Rachel.
As of this morning, how many people are in hospital and how many of those are in intensive care?
Well, just last night the numbers came down to just about 75, but we would expect them to rise slightly again this morning in hospital with 22 in intensive care. That has been a trend upward over the past 3 weeks. We had 38 people in hospital 3 weeks ago and about 13 people in ICU. So it's still off a low base. I think your listeners should take some assurance from that. But it is the trend that we're concerning about, particularly in the context of the rising number of daily cases.
Now, I know you don't have a full age breakdown at the moment, but is it possible to say anything about the people needing hospital treatment now? Because obviously, if we go back to the start of the year or we go back a year, we were talking mainly about older people. But by now, those people are in the main, they've received both doses of the vaccine.
Yeah, and we are heading into this wave or this surge in a very different way than we did in previous surges because we have, as you said in introductions, 60% of the adult population now fully vaccinated, 75% partially vaccinated and 5 million vaccines administered. So that's a strong line of defence that we didn't have previously. Second thing that is different, if you look at the case numbers that's coming through at the moment, 87% of the cases over the last 2 weeks have been under the ages of 45. So just 13% of them over the age of 45. Back in January, that was 40% of people over the age of 45. So we are seeing transmission levels at a high level of the younger population. That being said, what we do know is COVID over the past 16 months causes the most harm to the older population. So it's too early to assess the numbers of people who have been hospitalised at the minute, to take too much from that. But what we can say is, and talking to some of our lead consultants across the country, increasingly they are seeing more younger people. Our GPs are referring more younger people to hospital. And the concern is not just about hospitalisations. The concern, particularly for younger people, is long COVID. And we have many instances of where people may have been hospitalised, but long COVID can significantly impact particularly younger people as well. So too early to determine a trend of those 80 or so patients, but you know, we are seeing trends of younger people, certainly more cases and some referrals to hospital.
Because this is a question, I suppose, that many people are asking. If most of the vulnerable have now received both doses of the vaccine, why do you fear a surge in demand for beds in hospitals?
Yeah, but I think the reality of it is we now have a new vulnerable. If you look at the approach we took in the vaccination programme, working down through the ages, working down to people who are medically high risk, residents in long-term care settings. But now the exposure we have is the people who haven't been vaccinated. So that's the new vulnerable that we're dealing with. And the concern is twofold. Number one, as you're not vaccinated, you are at a higher level of risk. And number two, what we want to protect against is a high level of spread and transmission in the community that then puts at risk even those who are vaccinated. And certainly we are seeing people come for hospitalisation who have been fully vaccinated. So
you were saying yesterday, is it what, about 5% of people who are now testing positive have received both doses of a vaccine?
Yeah, and that's not unusual. That's a trend that we would have seen in the UK and Scotland as we're talking to them, because they're a few weeks ahead of us. So
that's what you're expecting?
Yeah, of the total cases that we've seen over the last week, 10 days, about 5% of them would have been people who have been fully vaccinated. And they have not been admitted to hospital at this stage, but, you know, we are seeing it break through into people who have been vaccinated. And, you know, vaccination gives you really high levels of protection against hospitalisation and ICU and hopefully mortality, but it doesn't give you 100% protection against getting the virus. So, you know, that's a factor we have to watch as well.
Did any of the people, any of the patients in hospital with COVID at the moment, did any of them catch COVID in hospital?
Well, if you look back to the dark days of January, when we had 2,000 people in hospital and we had 212 people in ICU, we tracked very carefully what we call healthcare-associated infections, so caught in a healthcare setting. And at that stage, that was running about 500 per week. The most recent we have two cases up to early July. So not a significant factor now, but that will be a function of transmission levels in the community. You know, so increasingly we are having our hospitals to have greater monitoring of the risk of people coming into hospital to protect that we don't end up in the same scenario as we did in January. But again, I will make the point to assure your listeners, we are going in a different way into this. While we do talk about hospitalizations and we are monitoring and we are cautious about it, we do have a new line of defence now, which is giving everybody some level of reassurance. But again, we do send a strong message to people who are not vaccinated.
At the moment, is there any danger that patients will once again see scheduled treatments and procedures being cancelled? Because there are some people who have seen those procedures cancelled maybe more than once at this stage.
Yeah, and what we're seeing right now is our hospitals are extremely busy, and they're busy with non-COVID care, which is what we want. We are seeing higher levels of presentations to our emergency departments, up higher levels than we would have at a benchmark of pre-2019.
And why is that, do you know?
There's a number of factors driving it. First of all, there's a lot more activity going on right now. So increasing activity, people are out and about, the economy's open more. People would have delayed their presentations in many cases of COVID. We are seeing more frailty cases in older people who may have not come forward in the last few weeks and months and now coming forward. And finally, we are getting back to non-COVID elective care, and that's what we want to do, and that's what we want to continue to protect. So
is there any danger that could be under threat? Because that's a question that matters an awful lot to a lot of people.
Yeah, and it does, and it's one we're concerned about when we see transmission levels in the community. But again, to assure your listeners, we're not there just now, right? You know, the base level we've come off for hospitalisations have been a lower base, thankfully. Hospitalisations are our last line of defence, and I do want to make this point for the public. Our first line of defence with vaccination programme, we didn't have that previously. Our second line of defence is our testing and tracing, which we're significantly investing in and planning for the surge that we're in right now. And thirdly are the public health measures, which we know work. And my call this morning is again to people, particularly those vulnerable people who aren't vaccinated, really protect yourself in the coming days and weeks. Really be careful about your social contacts. Really be careful as you're gathering indoors, a social gathering. So, you know, they matter.
You mentioned testing and tracing there. Given this sudden rise in numbers, do you have adequate testing and tracing capacity?
Yeah, and again, just to say, if you look back, do you remember this 100,000 famous figure last year, building up capacity of 100,000 lab capacity? We built that up further to about 180,000 in January, February. And we are planning on building that now to well over, just over 200,000.
Yeah, because we know that last January that all started to fall apart again because there was such an overwhelming surge in cases. Is there a danger that that could happen again?
Well, no, actually, if you think back to January, our testing and tracing system coped really well. Actually, we continued to test people relentlessly. There was a stage where close contacts, we had to just advise them to self-isolate.
There was an issue with tracing, wasn't there?
There's just an issue in terms of, there is an overwhelming factor you get to a point in time, but two or three things that we are doing. Firstly, we've rebuilt our lab capacity now to over 200,000. We will put in extra hours for our swabbing centres all across the country. We are putting in more pop-up centres into various parts of the country at high risk. We also will use antigen testing for testing of close contacts. So that gives us capacity above and beyond. We also have a surge capacity overseas in Germany for our lab tests. So we've built resilience into it. But again, you know.
So you're confident you can cope?
Oh, well, look, we're building resilience. What the reality of this, Rachel, it is, and it's the same for every European country, if it gets to an absolutely overwhelming stage, there's a point of which you can cope with that, but an overwhelming stage, it just reaches beyond. We will continue to test and trace. Resilience we put in is quite strong. My call again to the people who is just really adhere to the public health measures, it supports that too, but we've built strong resilience on the testing and tracing.
By the end of this week, will all of those aged between 60 and 69 have received both vaccine doses?
Yes, we put a particular focus in the last 4 weeks. It hasn't been a factor of delay, it's just been a factor of the dosage recommendation. So with the NIAC recommendation to bring that back to 4 weeks, those over 60, there were 450,000 people in total that we had to get through. And by the end of this week, we'll have got through all of those 450, the
so
vast majority of those.
Got through all of the 60 to 69 60, year olds?
Substantially complete. There are always some who haven't been able to come forward for various reasons.
Yeah, because you know that many people in that age group felt that they were being left behind when they saw younger people who got a different vaccine getting their second dose ahead of them.
I can understand how they failed that, but that wasn't a factor of, you know, the HCA not getting to them. That was a factor of recommended medical clinical guidance about dosage intervals. And you remember that went out to 16 weeks, back to 12, back to 8, and then back to 4. So we were following that guidance all the time. But thankfully, vast majority should be substantially complete by the end of this week. And it's really people who just haven't been in a position to come
forward.
And
what then about people in their 50s, some of whom also received AstraZeneca?
Oh, that's the whole lot. That's the all of the doses.
That's everybody who was due to receive a second dose of AstraZeneca.
The 450,000 figure that I just represented all of those people who had to get a second dose, including 50s, including over 60s. Now, what we are seeing is there are still some people in the 50s and 60s who haven't come forward for vaccination. And the portal is always open to them. And I make that call again. And we have seen over 11,000 people over 50 come forward through pharmacies. And that's positive for us. So the portal is always open. We continue people, encourage people to register if you haven't registered previously.
People aged between 25 and 29 can register on the vaccine portal from today. When are they likely to be called for their first jab?
Yeah, we're really pleased to announce yesterday that people in the ages 25, 29 can register today. Now, I would just make the point that's everybody, so it's 25 to 29 can register today.
So this is different from the previous occasions when it would have been 29-year-olds first, 28, 27 and whatever. This time, everybody can apply today.
Exactly that. So everybody in the ages 25, 29 inclusive can log on today and register. We're not stepping down through the ages. And that's part of our approach because we look through all our centres where we have available Pfizer. We want to make sure every single dosage we can, we get into people's arms. We know we're in a race against Delta, it's often said. So having available supplies, bringing forward. And if you look at that age group, 25, 29, our original intention, our forecast would be it was early August that we would start that and we bring that forward. And we now bring it forward. And it will equally be our intention to bring forward the 18th to 24th.
Yeah. And when are they likely to get the call, the people who are registering today?
So people are registering today. Generally, we aim to have it within about a 3 week period from the time you register to the time you get your vaccination. So some of them may over next week start to get appointments coming forward, maybe for the following week, but we'll start to get notifications. And generally we try aim to keep it to about a 3 week period from the time you register to the time your vaccination.
2 months on from the cyber attack, how much of the HSE's computer network is now back in working order?
Yeah, well, there's no doubt the cyber attack had an absolutely explosive impact on us. And I know the public seen COVID and the impact it had over 16 months. But for our healthcare staff, this really shook us. Where we are right now, really significant progress. About 90% of our hospital systems, our acute hospital systems, are back up and running, similar on the community side. And we're dealing with a smaller number of systems now. Vast majority of our end users accessing through their laptops or PCs are back up. Our servers are back up. But the last 10% do cause problems for us. And there's still some integration issues between hospitals and working, so there's still some slow, clunky issues that we're dealing with, but really so very significant.
And are any services affected at this stage?
No, ultimately the main services are back. They may be slower in terms of processing through those services, but the vast majority, particularly of our high clinical care services, are back. Our community services, some have been impacted in particular, but equally things like people applying for the medical cards online are back up and running.
Did you ever hear anything more from the people who did this?
No, we haven't, and that's my knowledge that we have. I mean, in the early days, we do know that there was notifications left for us on our servers. We would have passed that across the intelligence agencies from the HSE
perspective. But nothing since then?
Not to my knowledge. And our focus on the HSE perspective has been to continue to get the service back up, continue to protect the data. We would have left that with the intelligence services. But to my knowledge, no, we haven't had any further contact.
Paul Reid, Chief Executive of the HSE, thank you for joining us on Morning Ireland. We'll be back with more on the programme after a quick break.